From WXXI News, this is Connections, and I'm Daniel Kushner, filling in for Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour comes from a performance I witnessed in the spring of 2011 at Brooklyn's Skylight One Hanson, formerly Williamsburg Savings Bank Towers. This was a large-scale version of Tableau Vivant of the Delirium Constructions, a performance art piece by photographer-musician Sarah Small. 120 performers of all ages, ethnicities, shapes, and sizes, some of them clothed and some of them naked, posed and interacted with one another in cyclical movements before engaging in synchronized choreography. There was also live music, an opera aria sung by Shara Nova of the indie rock band My Brightest Diamond, Balkan folk music sung by Small's ensemble Black Sea Hotel, and a haunting drone composition sung by the performers themselves, with backing from the string quartet Brooklyn Rider. In addition to directing the performers in their actions, Small also officiated the weddings of multiple couples who were among the performers. If this sounds grandiose, emotionally intense, and perhaps overwhelming, it was. But it was also one of the few times that art gave me a revelation, changing not only my perspective as an audience member, but also the performer-audience paradigm itself. I wrote at the time, "We, the audience members, were witnessing their lives much in the same way that we witnessed the young couple's wedding. This was life, clothed in the trappings of art, yet somehow gloriously unadorned. And I envied it. It seemed to me that the real ideal experience was not the viewing of this scene, but being an active participant in it. I was struck with the fullness of the participants' activity, which reflected back to me my relative inactivity in that moment, playing the role of the empty voyeur. And somehow I was suddenly one of, somehow suddenly I was the one in the harsh spotlight. I was the tragic actor who had been called once again to the stage to perform my mundane role of onlooker, and I obliged." What I witnessed 13 years ago was a prime example of a multidisciplinary art piece, and there are many such works being presented at this year's Rochester Fringe Festival. Look at that segue. Wow, I'm a professional. I am joined in studio by three creators responsible for bringing these performances to Fringe. Starting to my left on your radio dial, Darren Stevenson, founding artistic co-director of Push Physical Theater. He and his troupe will be presenting Hyde September 14th, 15th, 20th and 21st. Thanks for being here, Darren.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm also joined to the right of Darren by Missy Fullsmith. She is the artistic director of Biodance, and they will be performing Carnival of the Animals at Fringe this year on September 14th and 20th. Missy, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
And finally, of course, I've asked Evan Meccarello, who is the artistic director of Cordancia Chamber Orchestra, to be here as well. He will be presenting Carnival of the Animals with Missy in a collaborative performance, as well as String Quartet Theater, which I only have a vague notion of, but I'm sure we'll get into. And the performances of String Quartet Theater will be on September 13th and 14th. Evan, hello.
Hello, Daniel. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Thanks to all of you. I am somebody who goes in for this kind of thing, performances that aren't just music, they're not just theater, they're not just dance, they're a combination of any number of elements. Why do you all enjoy creating these kinds of works?
I'll go first. I love to collaborate with all kinds of different artists. I feel like the dancers I work with are collaborators. I don't just tell them what to do. We create things together. But the more minds you can bring together in one room, the more surprises that happen. And I don't think you can create the same thing on your own that you can create with a number of different minds, especially when they're coming from a different area, right? So composers, musicians, visual artists, poets, writers, whatever they are, like they bring their own political point of view, they bring their own background, they bring their own life experience, right? And so that can't happen from just one human.
I agree totally, Missy. It's really remarkable when you bring in folks who are highly skilled, highly trained, immaculate artists in one discipline and who are also open to exploring outside of their main art form. And to gather a team of individuals who is open to that and explore has led to some transformational experiences in my own life, just like you mentioned at the top of the hour. So what I'm really looking for is to give audiences an intimate, a transcendent experience that feels like it is crossing over boundaries and opening doors.
Mm. I think for me, it's looking at what is the exciting thing that live performance can do that other media cannot. And one of the, the starting conversation that we had as we were creating Hyde was, if you're watching Netflix or you're watching a movie, you know the monster is not coming off the screen to get you. Ultimately, he's going to stay within that box. But in the theater, no such luck, right? He can come out and get you. So we looked at what can the principal character do. He knows he's in a show, and he can go get the audience if he wants to, and that puts us, all of us, on the edge of our seats. And I think that's the case for, you know, all of these sort of types of theater that both Evan and Missy do as well.
What I'm hearing in all of your answers is that these kind of multidisciplinary performances enable everyone involved to have a heightened engagement with either one another as performers or for the audience to engage in a different way, maybe not necessarily so directly with the performers, but sometimes. I think that feels really necessary to me, right? Like, Darren, you alluded to it, with so many different entertainment options available to us, it feels like live performance kind of has to go out of its way a little bit to connect. And it feels like there are more colors in one's palette when you're dealing with multidisciplinary performances, because you call upon each of these art forms distinct ways of connecting.
It's a conversation as well, isn't it, with the audience that you don't have. Like, if I see a show or a movie, I'm watching the same movie everybody else has seen. But when you come and see a performance, especially one that engages with the audience in more intimate ways, the show you go and see has never been done before and will never, ever be done again. That is a once-in-a-lifetime experience. And whether it's good or bad, whether you walk in scratching your head or you have an amazing time, that is a unique experience.
I'm wondering, yeah, I think that.
Sorry, I don't understand.
Oh, that was interesting. I don't know if anyone else heard that.
I have to apologize. If you heard that over the air, that was me attempting to turn off my phone.
It's a bit of performance art. A bit of performance art for
this
you.
This is a show that you've never seen before and will never see.
This is our interpretation of 4 minutes and 33 seconds.
My apologies.
So, I think that, yeah, I just like the way that these performances that you're all a part of at Fringe this year really are clearly like making a statement of some sort. They're strong artistic messages, and they also require, because like I said before, because there are multiple devices at work, dance and music and theater and all these different things, that it really requires the audience member to be, I think, just a little more present, a little more aware, and not just aware, but also maybe self-aware. As I kind of alluded to in the intro, like figuring out where you fit in the context of the performance or the message that the performance is giving, I think is kind of a real fun thing potentially. And I guess with that in mind, I think it's as good a time as any to sort of delve into specifically the performances we're talking about. Darren, you mentioned Hyde. As the title suggests, this is Push's take on the Jekyll and Hyde story. Mm-hmm. Pretty classic and well trodden path, I would say, at this point. But I know that, like, from what I've read of the performance so far, is that you really want to, you're playing with the idea of the villain and the degree to which the audience can and or wants to sympathize with the anti-hero.
Yeah. The premise, you know, we started by talking about why this well-trodden material and why now. And this is just to catch everybody up, the premise of the show, it is Jekyll and Hyde with a twist. And the twist is that Hyde has rented the theater. He has hired Push Physical Theater to help him set the record straight and tell his side of the story. So that's our launch in. And so you've got this sort of fairly comedic, crazy night with this unhinged narcissist. And we are asking the audience initially to hate him, and then to love him, and then to maybe not be sure. And really asking the audience, what do we do with this person? What do we do with bad people in society? And it's very easy to answer that question in the abstract for most people. But when you're actually dealing with that person in front of you and you're asked to give them their just desserts, will you do it? What are you thinking? What sort of a burden do we carry? And what kind of blame do we carry as a society? And so that's our play in a nutshell. Of course, there's a lot, it's physical theater, so there's a lot of acrobatics and sweating that goes into telling that story. But there you go. I got 2 weeks to get cardio in shape.
Yeah, there is, what is really fascinating about Push's performances in general is that one gets a sense of the physical toll of an act, or it's a much more, you're often dealing with kind of, you know, aesthetically the language is very ambitious, and you know the themes are almost always very thoughtful. Well, of course they're always thoughtful, by which I mean like very contemplative in nature, but the art form you're using is so visceral. You're physically sometimes, like, you know, tussling with your fellow performers, you're running around the stage, it is a workout, like it's all those things. And I think that visceral connection in the work helps to sort of drive home the immediacy of it. Yeah. and all the things that come with it.
Yeah, you can't hide it, right? That's why it's so visceral. We're, in a sense, we're the magician letting you see up his sleeve. So we are not hiding the work, and in fact cannot hide the physical work. And so you're watching performers get more exhausted, and you're hearing them out of breath, and you're seeing them, I mean, literally sweating all over the stage. Like, all of that, it makes it very immediate, very human. Primitive, maybe, but certainly it's very visceral.
I definitely see what you're saying. I guess primitive in the sense that it's sort of, I think, is meant to bring us back to a sense of our like fundamental experience as human beings, like what's at our core, what drives us, and
yes, we can't hide things with takes and new scenes. We're the same people doing the same things. Even it appears that we're not. So and I suppose in a way we do hide the effort as well. There are things that look very difficult to do that are quite easy and simple, and there are things that look transcendent and beautiful and ethereal that are insanely difficult to do, and so you are sometimes hiding the work. There's that mix, and I know Missy can speak to that, I'm sure, as well.
perfect segue. As I mentioned before, Missy, Biodance is performing Carnival of the Animals along with members of the Cordencia Chamber Orchestra. As may be the case with many people listening, my first experience with Carnival of the Animals by the French composer Camille Saint-Saëns was as a kid in music class. I'm pretty sure, like, you know, that, you know, it's sort of a fundamental, it's one of the pillars of like music, classical music for children, right? Each of the animals have their own music. It's very I don't want to say exaggerated, but it's very sonically descriptive. Mm-hmm. It's very clear what's being depicted and the characteristics of the animals being depicted. And so it's just fun in that way. And I know the first performance was canceled, but you all did eventually stage it at the Seneca Park Zoo.
We did.
Which must have been a lot of fun. Do you want to talk a little bit about that experience and how maybe it will differ from what Fringe audience members will see?
Sure. We actually did two shows at the Seneca Park Zoo, and it was really exciting to partner with them for the first time. The first show we did was during a normal zoo day, and we didn't do Carnival that day, but we did some other pieces together, and the audience could walk through the musicians and dancers and experience that. And actually, for me, what was the most exciting is that the animals became audience members. They came up towards us. They peered like around the normal zoo goers to try and see the dancers and musicians. The otters came up to the window. Like, it was really amazing. Wow. And it just made me think, you know, really, we should be creating material for animals. Why not? They're fantastic audience members. So that was the first day. And then, in fact, just this past Tuesday, we finally did the full evening with Carnival. And doing it right in that space is how it was meant to be. You want to add anything?
It was really exciting to be there and have that cross inspiration of being outdoors among the trees, among the animals, and offering our audiences a chance to stroll through the zoo and actually see the animals being depicted mm-hmm. on stage. So that was really a beautiful collaboration for Cordencia and for Biodance and for the Seneca Park Zoo. I especially related to some of the improvisations that the Biodance members did, movement improvisations around the zoo, interacting with the space. You know, interacting with a space is a big part of the interdisciplinary performances that I'm interested in creating, like the one Missy mentioned, where people strolled through the zoo and among the musicians to hear bird calls that we were performing while there was also movement. And so this idea of site-specific work, of taking a space and elevating it, offering a new angle on it. I think the director of the zoo mentioned that she had never really spent time in this one corner of the zoo that we did this piece, and that it gave her a new view of that space. And that's something that I really want to do both with spaces and with classical music. I choose, as artistic director of Cordencia, I choose collaborations like with Biodance to give people different views, not only of spaces, but also of these musical pieces, right? So when you set choreography to music, it's adding this lens, this whole layer that you can experience the art from. And that's also what I'm doing in string quartet theater. This is a show that casts the musicians of an extraordinary professional string quartet as speaking actors. So we're working with text. I have a co-collaborator, Tanner Effinger, who is the artistic director of Breadcrumbs Productions in Syracuse. And as music director, I'm working on most of the music side, and Tanner Effinger is working mostly on the dramatic side, and we're giving these musicians text to work with and characters to play. So they take the audience on a journey through multiple spaces in the theater and through multiple pieces of music. And what I find is that in our production, it's kind of in the round. The audience is around us, and they're also invited to move and to walk and to follow different characters to different spaces. There's a few moments in the show where characters break off and the audience has a choice. They can either stay. There's going to continue to be action in the one main room, but there's also going to be a character. Excuse me. There will also be a character taking a scene in another space. So you have a choice of, wow, which of these human beings am I feeling attracted to or connected to in this moment? Who do I want to hear more from? And they can follow that person into the space and get their side of the story in a scene with that performer. So we're taking these musical pieces, which range from the beloved old works like music by Alexander Borodin and Edvard Grieg, string quartets, and we're also mixing them with pieces by Angelica Negron and Missy Mazzoli, these contemporary composers who are writing today. So I'm all about this idea of giving audiences this intimate set of lenses to experience the arts and to feel connected, yes, and intimate, but also keeping in mind that an audience member might not want to get so crazy. So we design our show in a way that you don't have to interact. You don't have to move. You could sit in the main room and you will get a full show. It's an invitation rather than any kind of force.
Yeah, I love, you know, what you're all describing. Each performance in its own way allows the audience member to have an immersive experience where they feel more a part of it, whether that's spatially or because of direct engagement on the part of the performers in the case of Hyde. I especially like that the idea that the audience members are given a choice, that they are sort of active in how they choose to receive the work, which I kind of feel like that it may be subtle, but I think it's important to empower audience members in that way, to feel like they have maybe more of a stake in the performance, that it's not just something that's happening at them or to them, but it's happening with their participation. That And I think by doing that, it also concedes that without the audience, the performance doesn't happen. That, I mean, and that's that actually, you know, may or may not be true. Like, you know, performers can play to an empty room, and they're still doing it. But because performing of any kind is a sort of ultimately, ideally, I think, a selfless act where you're giving something of yourself, and once you give it and it's received, it's no longer yours. It becomes something else. When it becomes that something else, I think, like, it's important that it's in the hands of stewards who understand and appreciate and want to continue the conversation, I think. And I think all of that is at play in these various performances and in multidisciplinary works in general. I've said a lot of things there. Has anyone latched onto anything that anything there?
I love it. And I actually have a question for Evan, if I can ask. I have not done... I think some of the things you were talking about, Daniel, happen when you do theater in the round. It forces that. And I have not done very much of that. But I've been in audiences in theater in the round. And I am aware as an audience member that I am looking at other audience members who are looking back at me. And so I'm watching their responses to the work. And I'm also aware that I'm being seen as well. And I wonder, A, how much that turns the performance into a kind of conversation with the audience amongst themselves. Maybe it's not a verbal one. And also, how do you manage, and I know, Missy, you've done a lot of that kind of work, how do you manage that dynamic as performers? Because one of the big problems with this kind of theater is it can feel very dangerous. And in the right hands, it's wonderful. And in the wrong hands, it's it can be emotionally actually dangerous, right, for an audience. So how do you guys deal with that, Evan and Missy?
Well, I know exactly what you mean. There's this feeling, there can be a feeling of too much spotlight as an audience member is perhaps on me, too much attention is on me. I think that, first of all, it's something that in our show, String Quartet Theater, we are acknowledging that there are people in the room with us. And in fact, without spoiling anything, there are very small, very low stakes opportunities for certain audience members to participate or do something small that actually moves our show along. And so I think one of the ways we deal with that, different pieces of immersive theater deal with this in different ways. Fans of immersive theater are familiar with Sleep No More, the famous physical theater show in New York City, which I think has just closed after 10 years. And that show, they offered audience safety by giving the entire audience had to wear masks.
Right.
And so it sort of serves as this viewfinder and protection, actually, from attention, anonymization, right? We're not doing anything so intense as that because our show is really just breaking the fourth wall, actually, a bit more and acknowledging there are various moments where the musician actors speak to the audience directly saying, you can come with me now. I'm going this place. Mm-hmm. You know, we're offering invitations. Yeah. And I think it also helps to do, at least for an audience that may be less comfortable and less familiar, to do really beautiful, comfortable things with your art in that space, especially in the beginning. We're offering music that is just really gorgeous, romantic era, lush sounds. Yeah. We're offering, you know, some freshness of having speaking actors. But I think part of it is, in our case, acknowledging and saying, yes, you know, I see you. You know, you might have direct eye contact. I also find, and I'd love to hear your take on this, Missy, I also find that being in the round and having a little bit of acknowledgement also lets the audience feel a lot more connected when the quartet does then sit down to play. We did this last year in a 5-day workshop in Syracuse. And one of the comments that kept coming up with our audience members after witnessing String Quartet Theater was, wow, when they sat down to play that Borodin after I had seen this one-on-one scene with just this one actor in another room, I was watching them listening to the whole quartet playing, and I felt like I knew that person who was playing that viola. Mm-hmm. I felt like I knew this cellist, and that made the sound of the quartet sound so different to me. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of like intimacy and connection that I really am savoring mm-hmm. in this kind of work. What do you think, Missy, about this whole?
Yeah, I feel like there's that vulnerability that you open up in an audience member if you approach them, if you reach out to them, if you perhaps even touch them, which, you know, you have to tread gently. But when that happens, I think that there is sort of a wall that gets disintegrated a bit, and so they experience the work in a more intimate way. And so in Carnival of the Animals, we have three pieces, in fact, in the show. So Carnival is one of them. But we're doing a new piece that was made this year called Compass, and it's with a dancer I'm working with, Angela Lopez, and with a composer and musician, Austin White, who created this music from Found Sounds, and he's playing guitar. And the dancer does approach the musician and then also does approach some people in the audience. And I think, you know, in dance training, you get really good at understanding people's body language and reading people's body language. And so you can tell if an audience member is like, no way, or if they're inviting some interaction. And you kind of have to be respectful of that. You don't have to be, but like, in my opinion, being respectful of that allows everyone to have an experience that's exciting, maybe a little bit on the edge, but also doesn't push them to a place that feels, you know, not welcome, right?
Yeah, and I've seen you particularly, Missy, be really effective and extraordinary at this. I've seen you dance near and with, without touching, but with audience members in the performances we did at the zoo in ways that were really engaging. And yeah, I would say that we are, as far as our string quartet theater, it's a very warm and very gentle amount of that. It's very, I would say our performance is closer to promenade theater, where you follow the action and you might move a little, but it's not so interactive.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
I do want to take a few moments to invite some interaction on the part of our listeners. We're going to take a quick break, but before we do, I do just want to share with you, you can connect with us right now. You can give us a call at 263-9994 or 844-295-8255 if you have any questions for Missy, Evan, or Darren. You can also email us at connections@wxxi.org. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back to talk more about multidisciplinary arts performances.
I'm Megan Mack. Coming up in our second hour, a special rebroadcast. Rochester's animal shelter is at a pivotal moment as homeless pets face new challenges. WXXI's Jasmine Singer, Beth Adams, and Brian Sharp spent months investigating the situation. We discuss their reporting, the state of the shelter, and what's next. Stay with us.
You're listening to Connections on WXXI. I'm Daniel Kushner, filling in for Evan Dawson. And if you're just tuning in, we are talking about multidisciplinary performances, specifically performances that are happening at the Rochester Fringe Festival this year, which runs from September 10th through September 21st. I am joined by Darren Stevenson of Push Physical Theater, Missy Full-Smith of Biodance, and Evan Macarello of Cordancia Chamber Orchestra. I want to sort of, so I guess this idea of multidisciplinary art, one way you can, the kind of prototypical vision, I guess, of this, you could argue, was the composer Richard Wagner's concept of Gesamtkunstwerk, or total work of art. And he presented this, you know, most notably through his operas referred to frequently as the Ring Cycle. Now, whenever you bring up Wagner or try to discuss anything related to Wagner, it's a whole can of worms for a lot of different reasons. This is a man whose work the critic Alex Ross once described in a book about the man as the Muzak of genocide, which is such a it's just such an amazing quote. I had to include it, but that withstanding, he was obviously a complicated figure, but in terms of this concept of this kind of all-encompassing art that told a story using a lot of different elements and was just kind of demanded that you demanded that you take it seriously and that you engage with it on some level. I think that undoubtedly had repercussions for a lot of art that came after. Does that sort of, this may not be the case, but does his work in that regard, do you, Is it a consideration for what you, the work that you do? Did it at all lay the groundwork, or is it just kind of an interesting thing to think about reflexively? Or maybe it's not an interesting thing to think about reflexively, but I'm bringing it up anyway. I don't know. Take it as you will.
Well, as an orchestral conductor, the influence of Wagner is inescapable. He's someone who not only moved the needle on this idea of Gesamtkunstwerk, this total encompassing artwork that includes different disciplines. You know, you have painters creating sets. You have poetry. You have singing. You have the orchestra. You have architecture. The idea of building an actual hall specifically to create your vision to its maximum potential was something that he developed. So certainly the weight of history is there. Someone, I forget which conductor I spoke to, that quoted somebody saying that Wagner was the most written about person in the 19th century after Jesus. If you like follow the citations and all these things, I don't know how true that is, but it's one of those things that feels true.
Yeah, totally. it totally does. Yeah, for sure.
So, I mean, you can't deny that this is a thing that is there. I think in the 20th century, and perhaps Darren or Missy can speak to this even better than I could, there's been other influences leading us toward the type of work we're really discussing here as multidisciplinary. You know, there are creators who pushed dance and theater in a more outward direction. I think about, you know, I think about Kurt Weill. I think about, you know, some of these mid and late 20th century folks that maybe you'd like to cite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think in dance, Pina Bausch stands out, a German choreographer who's got all kinds of crazy things on stage, you know, inches of water and 5 million roses and things like that.
Yeah.
Right.
I think there's a technical aspect to this that when you're in college, so in the world of academia, a great way to learn, in order to learn a discipline, you need to understand what that discipline is and what it isn't. So that means categorizing different disciplines, separating them out, and understanding what's what, which is a great way to learn, a great way to see the world. But then as a professional artist, all we do is make things. That's what we do. And so I now care less about what tool I'm using, so much as am I using the right tool for the job. So whether, you know, if the show needs text, then text goes in. If it needs music, music goes in. If it's not necessary, then it's out. Once we're stopping to ask the question, wait, what is the thing we're doing? I almost feel like we've moved into criticism and analysis, which is not unimportant. It's just antithetical to the process of creating, at least I think so.
Mm-hmm. Are you asking, what do I want the audience to feel? Is that a kind of more of a driving question than how am I doing it?
Yeah, like what is the best way? So as a ballet dancer, we've got what, 40 something basic core moves. And then you're asking yourself, I want the audience to feel X, Y, and Z. What is the thing in my discipline that gets me as close as I can get to that? Or you can say, of the universe of possible movements, of possible things that I can do on stage, what is the thing that will get the audience closest to the experience that we want to have together? And that may mean it kind of sucks because as a performer, the training becomes very difficult because you're trying to learn. You know, I always feel a little bit on the back step. You're trying to learn many, many different things.
Yeah, I teach a choreography class at University of Rochester right now. And the tools are like answering the questions that you're talking about, what, where, when, how. But all of those tools are only, you choose those tools because you're answering the question why, right? Mm-hmm. And so, like, what is which is it that you need in order to get to what your intent is, right? For me, it's not necessarily an emotional response. I mean, it could be that, but it could be, there could be a lot of things. It could be an abstract concept, right? But what do you need to get to what you're really trying to dig into in terms of a concept?
Yeah.
Someone that you brought to U of R relatively recently that is a huge inspiration to me is Meredith Monk, an artist who's taking composition, dance, a song,
film,
you know, it goes on and on. And that's an artist that I would point to in terms of what I'm hoping to explode open with classical music and with string quartet theater and these kinds of more immersive classical experiences.
The sense that I get to, like, I remember when Meredith came to Rochester for that, and she was here briefly as well, I think, and
I met her.
She was there. with people like that, and with people like Pina Bausch, and all these different individuals we're talking about. And hearing you describe how you arrive at these multidisciplinary works yourselves is that it's not about making a deliberate choice. Okay, I'm going to choose this medium. I'm going to choose that medium. It's about what organically kind of springs forth to tell the story. And when you're talking about people who perform art and create art in that way, who they are as people, their personalities, what drives them, And the vibes that they put out and how they interact with you is almost like it's bigger than art. They just happen to like choose art as the vehicle to drive home the point. But like they are people in your space that are existing and eliciting a response from you. And I think it seems to me that like the best art does that, where you kind of forget that you're watching a performance, you're experiencing something. You're just fully in that moment. And I think ideally that's what these kinds of performances do. And because they're using all these different tools that we're talking about, it enables the audience member to remove the awareness that, oh, this is a performance I'm watching, from them, from their perspective, if it's hindering them from experiencing it. And I think it can, right? So anyway, I'm sort of going all over the place, but
Well, there's a thing that happens. So Push uses a technique called devising, which is a sort of fairly common word in Europe, but not so much known here. But our work is created in the studio with the cast that's making it. So, and one of the things that we think of the creative process is that it is it can be a collision in the best of ways, even rather than a collaboration, although of course it is collaborative. So we pay close attention to disagreements. As we're working, whenever we butt into opposite ideas and you start to feel a little emotion there, it's very easy to say, you know, for the sake of peace, let's just do the easy thing here, or let's have a third idea. But what we try to do is respectfully lean into those disagreements and say, okay, that's where the tension is. That's what this show should be about. And in fact, that's in Hyde, there are Heather Stevenson and myself and Ashley Jones are all in it, and the three creators of the show. And all of us came into this process with a very strong idea of the show we wanted to make, and they were very different shows. And so it took a while, but figuring out how to push for not our own agenda, but we're pushing our agenda for the sake of the audience, because there may be something that needs to be said here.
I feel like I can't talk about multidisciplinary shows without talking about W. Michelle Harris, who is a collaborator that I've worked with. She's a digital media artist here in Rochester, and I've worked with her for over 12 years or so. And the process with her is always so interesting because in the beginning we work separately, and then we, you know, and she'll come and watch rehearsals and things like that. But then when she shows me what she's working on, it sort of blows my mind because, yeah. A, it's really aligned with what I'm thinking, but also there, it's never what I would have done myself. And so she'll be doing Carnival of the Animals and, in fact, the other another piece that Cordancia is doing, the Mio La Bouffe C'est la Toy. And the multidisciplinary nature of that creative process of, you know, here's in Carnival, that piece was created sort of as a joke. It was kind of created in irony. The composer didn't want it to be performed before he was, you know, while he was alive. But after he died, his friends were like, okay, now we can perform this piece because it's really fun and crazy.
It specifically mocks certain kinds of musicians, like pianists and music critics.
Right. But a general audience just listening might not know those jokes, but in the process of making a dance, I can kind of poke through some of that, and right. we make a joke of it too, and in a different way. Yeah. And so it's sort of, and I wouldn't be doing that if I wasn't necessarily working with musicians or work, you know, right? So like it definitely informs how we make choices about what we do in our own disciplines. But it's a conversation, like an ongoing conversation. It's like Darren said, it's collaboration, but it's not just collaboration. It's like this combined, mix up of ideas that are like sometimes not great and sometimes really crazy. And you have to consider all of that. You know, you can't just sort of edit out as you go. You just have to throw it all in. And then later, maybe you take out some of that extra stuff.
Yeah.
And it's such a fun process, you know. We often work with Biodance, with Cordancia Chamber Orchestra, and it's, you know, you have some music rehearsals alone, and then you come together and you see what Missy and her her colleagues have created, and it's really, there's a wonderful moment in that first rehearsal where I catch out of the corner of my eye, if I'm conducting something in the choreography, I'm like, and go, wow, that makes sense, you know, or wow, I hadn't thought of that, you know, like. Yeah. Like Darren was speaking about, you know, or Missy was saying, you know, wow, I hadn't seen that before or thought of combining it that way. That's something that's really at play in string quartet theater, because we have a fabulous playwright, director, and actor, Tanner Effinger, who's directing our artists from the theater perspective, and I'm directing from the music perspective, and so to see that process happen, and we're just starting it. Our last artist, who's going to be with us for the next 2 weeks rehearsing, just flew in from Florida late last night, and he's the associate principal cellist of the Florida Orchestra, and so he has a very busy schedule and just made it in just in time, and they're there now in our rehearsal space with Tanner, and it's wonderful to see, oh wow, this is where we have to go for these dramatic reasons, and here's how the music I've selected is going to support those things.
Mm-hmm. I've got just one more question for you all. It occurs to me that the term multidisciplinary just sounds really wonky and not particularly like inviting to anyone. With that in mind, maybe you disagree, but how would you describe these types of performances that you all do? If you had to give sort of an elevator pitch to somebody about why this is worthwhile and why they very well might want to check out these performances, how would you describe what they would experience?
I would say that with string quartet theater and with Carnival of the Animals, these shows at Fringe are about creating experiences. I think it's experience creation. It's emotional connection. It's bridging. So I like the idea. I don't always relate to multidisciplinary. That's a lot of syllables, but but the idea of would you like to hear gorgeous classical music in an intimate setting with a story of love and a story of loss and how we process it? That's string quartet theater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Darren and Missy, 15 to 20 seconds each, maybe.
For me, it's about, you know, if you come because you love music and then you discover dance and you discover projected visual art, that's amazing, right? So it's like, it gives you these insights that you would never have expected, or may you don't know what you don't know, right?
It's good. Physical theater, it's climbing on each other, it's throwing each other around the stage, it's intense, visceral action theater. It's, heart-stopping. Well, we hope it's not heart-stopping, literally.
Right.
You get what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to thank all my guests for being here. Their performances will be at Rochester Fringe Festival. For more info, go to rochesterfringe.com. Thank you, Darren Stevenson, Missy Full-Smith, and Evan Macarello. My name is Daniel Kushner. I have been your guest host here for Connections Today, and I hope you all have a wonderful week.